Hello, everyone, and welcome to the second season of The History of Modern Greece, where we cover the subject of the fall of Constantinople to the modern day. I'm your host, Daniel Roberts, and I'm here with my father, George.
Hi, my name's George.
And our music is brought to you by Mark Youngerman. This is episode 53, The Viking Origin Story, Age of Vikings.
In our last episode, we set the stage for the Viking Age. We talked about the journey from the Proto-Indo-Europeans to the corded ware culture, as well as the Nordic Bronze Age. We also discussed the evolution of the Viking longboat and how it came to dominate the oceans and shallow rivers of Europe. In this episode, we're going to discuss the Viking Age itself, but I thought I'd take this time to discuss something we missed in the last episode, and that is the Norse religion. One reason we're talking about the Viking gods is that they're still relevant to us today. The words Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday are all named after the Norse gods: Tyr, Woden, Thor, and Freya. You might ask yourself, why would English Christians name their days after Viking gods? Didn't the English hate the Vikings for killing all of their people and burning all of their houses? Well, the truth is, the Anglo-Saxons who conquered England were pagans, who came from a land very close to modern-day Denmark. And their gods were the same gods as the Vikings. And what is most interesting is how similar Viking religion was to ancient Greek religion.
According to Norse religion, in the beginning there was naught but a great yawning void known as Ginningagap. This was an infinite expanse of darkness and ether. The first realm to form was Muspelheim in the south, a bright land engulfed in fire and guarded by Surt with his flaming sword. To the north formed Niflheim, the freezing land of fog containing the spring Hvilgamir, from where the primordial rivers began to flow. These rivers flowed into the void and began to freeze until the void was completely filled with ice. The south was filled with bright sparks that came from Muspelheim, which created warm winds that traveled north. As the warm winds from the south met the ice in the north, it caused a melting. These droplets came together and created new life, which took the form of the frost giant named Ymir. When the frost giant lay down to sleep, the sweat from his left armpits formed two children, a male and a female, while his legs formed a six-headed monster. His children produced a race of frost giants which lived in the frozen world of Niflheim. The melting ice then created a mythical cow known as Aumbia. This giant cow survived by licking the salt off the ice, while her milk sustained the children of Ymir, the frost giants. While this cow licked away at the ice, it uncovered long hair, and as it kept licking, it slowly revealed a frozen man within the ice. And on the third day, that man awoke. This man was named Buri, and he is known as the first god, the creator. I'm unsure how, but Buri had a son, and this man's name was Bor. We don't know how they existed like this in the ice world, but Bor eventually took one of the ice giantesses as a wife, who bore three children. The eldest of these three children were Odin, Vili, and Vi. These three brothers worked together to kill the original frost giant Ymir. Ymir's body lay broken and bleeding on the ice caps of Niflheim. His blood flowed from his corpse and flooded Niflheim, drowning all of the frost giants except for one. The sea and the lakes came from Ymir's blood. The mountains formed from his bones. His head was placed over the earth, which became the sky, and the sparks and ambers from Muspelheim in the south became the stars.
Can you really listen to this creation story and not say it sounds similar to the Greek creation story with Gaia and Uranus? Maybe it's a little more violent. Actually, it's the exact same level of violence. But the Viking story of creation has more ice, which makes sense considering the Norse lived in the frozen north. But back to mythology. Odin and his brothers created a new world out of Ymir's body, and it was called Midgard, the land halfway between the frozen world in the north, Niflheim, and the burning hot world in the south, Muspelheim. While living in Midgard, Odin and his brothers created new life. He used driftwood to create a perfect man and woman and breathed life into them. Their names were Ash and Elm. The two humans' domain was in Midgard, the garden between the frozen ice and the burning fire, where they still live today. Odin became the ruler of Midgard and the humans and built himself a capital city in the middle of the realm and called it Asgard. It is in this city that he took a beautiful wife named Freya, or Frigg, who bore him many children. Odin ordered the construction of a bridge that would connect all of the realms together, and this was called the Bifrost. But the humans living on Earth called it a rainbow. Odin is known as the Allfather in Norse mythology because he is the father of all the gods and all of mankind. Despite wielding great power, he put knowledge above all else, and on his quest he sought out Mimir's well, which was said to contain all knowledge. But the knowledge water at the bottom of the well was forbidden, and the guardian of the well demanded Odin make a sacrifice before he could drink from it. And so Odin plucked out his eye and gave it to Mimir, so he could drink from the well and gain its knowledge. But what could be so important to Odin to pluck out his eye? Well, it turns out he knew the end of the world was coming, what he called Ragnarok. And he wanted all of the knowledge needed to delay the end of the world. Odin's end goal was to build an army of the best warriors to prepare for the final battle at the end of the world. And so he sent his Valkyrie, an army of noble women warriors, to every battle in Midgard, where they found the souls of the bravest and strongest men who fell in battle. The Valkyrie brought the souls of these fallen warriors to the halls of Valhalla, where Odin waited for them. It is said that at the end of the world, when Ragnarok came to Midgard, the brave warriors and the gods would burst from the hall and fight shoulder to shoulder against the enemies of Earth. A quick note here. There are a lot of similarities between the Greek myths and the Norse myths. The Greek myth talked about the Amazonian women who fought at the gates of Troy. And here we have Valkyrie, who are warrior women who seek the souls of the bravest warriors. But there's another interesting theme, which is the end of the world. Now this might not parallel Greek mythology as close, but it sure is similar to Christian lore. Ragnarok and Armageddon both represent the battle at the end of times.
Thor is the strongest of the gods and the son of Odin. He controls the thunder and flies through the skies in a chariot pulled by two goats, and wields a magical hammer that is both indestructible and will never miss its target when thrown. Another god that appears to be much older in tradition, as in this god was likely worshipped by Norsemen during the Bronze Age, or even when they were part of the courted ware culture, is that of Tyr. Tyr is a god of war, similar to Ares or Mars, and in Norse mythology he will be at the Battle of Ragnarok with his brothers and sisters. But he is so seldomly referred to in Norse mythology that scholars think he was a much older god who was replaced by newer deities. One reason we can tell he was very important is that he was given a day to remember him. Anytime you wake up on a Tuesday morning, you are waking up to Tyr's day. But because he is older than the other gods, he has less written about him, and therefore there is less for me to say. I hope that little sidetrack of Viking gods was useful and didn't chase any listeners away. We felt we had to cover them for two reasons. The first was to show the similarities between Norse and Greek gods, and the second is because we find it interesting and wanted to talk about it. Something we realized while researching this was there is a strange connection between the end of times in Christianity and the end of times in Norse mythology. And if that isn't enough, if you ever listen to the History of the English Language podcast by Kevin Stroud, then you will know that the English word hell is actually a Norse word, and it means the darkness at the bottom of the ocean. Hell is a Norse word, and before that, everyone referred to hell as Hades, which is a Greek word. So right there, you have two words, from Greek and Norse, that refer to the same thing in English.
Now back to the Age of Vikings. You know who these people are. You know where they're from. And you know their religion. The Vikings raided Lindisfarne in 796 CE and came back home with tons of gold and loot and slaves, and they did it all without losing a man or ship. And this easy victory encouraged every man who heard this story to ditch their turnip farm, pick up an iron sword, and go Viking. Of course, we can't talk about Vikings without mentioning the famous Ragnar Lothbrok. This is the most famous Viking in human history and was written about in the Saga of Ragnar during the 13th century. Even though this story was first written down in the mid-1200s, it was widely shared through oral tradition from as far west as Iceland and as far east as Russia, and everywhere in between. Every Nordic household knew the name Ragnar Lothbrok. His story has been told and retold so many times throughout the centuries. And with the latest Vikings TV show on the History Channel, people are hearing his stories again. But a lot of Ragnar's stories are fables, and we want to break through the legend and tell you who the real Ragnar Lothbrok is and what he did. After the death of Charlemagne and the breakup of his empire, the Western Frankish kingdom was governed by Louis the Pious. It is here that we get our first written account and the beginning of the Viking Age. Louis was king and co-emperor, and descended from his father, the greatest emperor the recent world had ever known, and he ruled as though he were as strong and powerful as him. He continued the conquest north, which brought his realm face to face with the kingdom of Denmark. King Horik of Denmark had to fight to stake his claim at the throne, and his title of king in Denmark didn't mean he was the only king in Denmark. Being king in a Viking region was a very dangerous job, and to make his life more difficult, King Horik was being undermined by another rival who was directly sponsored by Louis the Pious. It became very apparent to King Horik that Louis was trying to destabilize the region so that he could conquer it. This wasn't a new tactic. Charlemagne used similar tactics to conquer and subjugate half of Europe. But Louis was not Charlemagne, and his resources didn't go as far. Needless to say, King Horik defeated his rival, and then he looked at his enemy to the south, West Francia, and that bastard who tried to overthrow him, King Louis the Pious. It is at this point in history that the Viking Age descends upon Francia with fiery vengeance.
It started small, with only a few ships raiding into France. But those raiding parties grew in numbers. And soon a sea king came down from the north, and his name was Ragnar Lothbrok. Up until this point, Charlemagne made sure to fortify the rivers that drained into the sea. He knew from experience that there were barbaric pagans living to the north of Saxony, and he had men stationed 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. As long as Charlemagne was in charge, his river systems were fortified. But Charlemagne was dead. and these river fortifications had fallen in disarray. There weren't enough men to man them, and the upkeep fell sideways. By the time Ragnar came down from the north, the river defense systems were all but abandoned. One city in France was raided in 834, then again in 835, and again in 836. The raids came every year, and each time they came with more men. During this time, there were letters written from King Horik of Denmark to King Louis the Pious. It appears as though King Horik didn't approve of the raids and condemned those who did it. This could mean one of two things. Either Horik was lying to King Louis, or Horik had no control over the men from the north. In 845 CE, a Viking raid came into Francia, not with 5 boats and a couple of dozen men with axes, nor was it 10 boats with 100 men. This raid came into Francia was something they never expected or prepared for. Over 100 Viking boats filled with over 5,000 heavily armed Viking soldiers came up the river. This raid was led by a man named Reginheiris, and modern scholars believe this man is the original source of the story of Ragnar Lothbrok. This raiding party sacked several small towns as they made their way up the Seine River, until they made it to the capital of the West Frankish kingdom, Paris. Their tactics were vicious, surprise attacking their victims with 100% of their strength, overpowering and demoralizing their enemies as fast as possible. If there was a heavily fortified village of 100 heavily armed Franks, then the Vikings would charge as fast and as loud as possible with thousands of men, terrifying their defenders into giving up and fleeing. It was the original blitzkrieg. Hit them hard and fast with everything you've got.
When Reginheiris's army made it to Paris, King Louis was no longer on the throne. It was his son, Charles the Bald, in charge of defending Paris. He had never faced anything as serious as this raid. Not since the Battle of Tours in 732 did a Frankish army face off against an army of this size. But Paris was a well-defended castle, sitting on an island in the middle of the Great Seine River. It was going to take a lot to break through their defenses. Unfortunately, one of the holiest sites was outside of the city walls, and there was no way Charles was going to let this barbaric army sack their holy chapel. So he sent an army outside and broke them into 2 sections. While Charles sat on top of the walls, looking down at the barbarian army and their riverboats, with a large portion of Frankish soldiers on one side of the river, and a smaller detachment on the other side of the river. From up top, it looked like Charles had the barbarians surrounded on 2 fronts. There is no way to tell if Charles ever thought he had the upper hand, even for a minute. But what we do know is what happened next. Reginheiris, or Ragnar Lothbrok, looked at the 2 armies, and instead of dividing his men up into 2 groups and fighting them both at the same time, he descended upon the smaller army with all of his men. They slaughtered every soldier, cutting them to pieces in full view of their comrades on the other side of the river and in front of Charles the Bald watching from his perch on the castle. The slaughter pumped up the Viking warriors and demoralized the Frankish soldiers. The initial battle killed almost every soldier in the Frankish detachment, but there were survivors. Ragnar's men scoured the battlefield for men still alive and dragged them all to the edge of the river. They shouted and taunted the Franks and the king up in the castle, who watched helplessly as the survivors, one by one, were propped up on a stone, turned to face the Franks across the Seine River before having their throats cut open and their blood drained out as a sacrifice to the god Odin. There is no doubt,
At this point, Charles was shitting his pants. The Vikings camped around the river's edge and waited and watched the city of Paris, which stood well protected on the small island. Knowing exactly what day it was, the Vikings made their move against the Parisians. They chose Easter, knowing full well it would further cripple the Franks' will to fight. And sure enough, Charles the Bald had enough. He called a meeting with the Viking leader Regin Harris, or Ragnar Lothbrok, and agreed to pay 600 pounds of gold and 6,000 pounds of silver in exchange for the Vikings leaving Paris and its people be. The agreement was made, and a terrible precedent was set for the people of Western Europe, because the Vikings learned only one lesson from this. People will pay you not to attack them. Ragnar may have taken the payoff for other reasons as well, for the Vikings encountered another inhabitant of the European continent while they camped outside of Paris. The plague broke out in the Viking camp, making the decision to take the gold and leave a very easy one.
The Vikings left France with their army, and Charles the Bald was able to breathe a sigh of relief and focus his attention where he thought it best. For his brothers in the East were his true rivals. This rival between brothers in East and West Francia became the rivalry between France and Germany that persisted for over 1,000 years. Ragnar Lothbrok, or Regn Harris, returned to Denmark and showed King Hork the hundreds of pounds of gold and silver and boasted about how easy it was to take. The only enemy, he said, that had any effect on his men was the plague sent upon his army while camping in the outskirts of Paris. King Hork of Denmark may have been impressed with this loot, but he was equally angry with the enemy they made to the south, for not long after, the King of Francia invaded the northern country and forced King Hork to come to terms with him. As a sign of good faith to the empire to the south, King Hork had most of the men involved with the Paris raid arrested and executed. He seized the gold and plunder from Paris and prepared to return it to the King of Francia. This act of betrayal to his countrymen started a mass migration out of Denmark. There were many warriors in the Nordic countries who felt they were strong enough to take what was theirs without the King of Denmark's approval.
Ragnar Lothbrok left Denmark before King Hork cracked down on the raiders. He had his eyes set on more loot and riches in the lands to the south. In 854, King Hork was killed by his nephew. And after this, the Kingdom of Denmark was broken up into several smaller kingdoms. Ragnar sailed the North Sea, and it's impossible to say where he went. Legends say he went to Ireland, and others say he went to Northumbria to wage war against the king. The legend takes over, as we lose all direct sources of information. The most famous tale of Ragnar says he was shipped off the coast of England and found himself in the kingdom of Northumbria, where he was captured by royal soldiers. The legends say the king had Ragnar thrown into a pit of snakes. The slow death saw him bitten and strangled for many hours before finally succumbing to his wounds. Before dying, according to the saga of Ragnar Lothbrok, he issued a warning to the king, who watched him die. My, how the little piggies will grunt when they realize how the old boar suffered.
Whether or not the king of Northumbria executed Ragnar Lothbrok, a massive invasion of England was soon to follow. The legendary Vikings who led this raid are real-life people in history. They called themselves the Sons of Ragnar, and they led the great heathen army. There was Ivar the Boneless, Bjorn Ironside, Uba the Raider of England, Halfdan the first Viking king of Northumbria, and Sigurd Snake in the Eye. These men were all famous warriors on their own, but in the great heathen army they came together to get vengeance on the king of Northumbria. These men called themselves sons of Ragnar, but in reality they were probably not descended from the same man. In our next episode, we will talk briefly about the sons of Ragnar, including the great heathen army that rampaged England and led to the Danish settlement of northern England. We will also talk about the famous Viking named Rollo, who really set the stage for the Age of the Normans. It may seem like we have completely diverged away from the story of modern Greece, but I assure you, the people who are the Vikings became a people called the Normans. And it is the Normans who ultimately brought down Constantinople and the Greek Byzantine Empire. Please bear with us for a couple more episodes as we continue the story of the Vikings, so that we may quickly return to the story of modern Greece.
According to the Cracamel, a poem written in the 12th century Scotland and originally translated into English by Thomas Percy, while Ragnar Lothbrok lay in the pit of snakes, his last words were, "It gladdens me to know that Odin prepares for a feast. Soon I shall be drinking ale from the curved horns. This hero that comes into Valhalla does not lament his death. I shall not enter Odin's hall with fear. There I shall wait for my sons to join me, and when they do, I will bask in their tales of triumph. The Aesir will welcome me. My death comes without apology, and I welcome the Valkyries to summon me home." So after doing this episode, we noticed there were a lot of similarities in the Greek mythology, in the Norse mythology, not just to Greek mythology, but a lot of it was very similar to Christianity. And there's actually a few things we find very similar.
Yeah, one of the similarities was the end of the world battle, the Ragnarok of the Norse, and of course the Armageddon of the Christian belief. Is it coincidental, or like that's kind of wild, isn't it?
So the other thing too is the breath of life. And I know in the Bible they mold man out of clay and then they breathe life into him, and in Norse mythology, they carve man out of wood and then breathe the breath of life into him. So it almost seems like the exact same story.
And the other one too, when they're talking about the well of knowledge, that is so similar as well. And tree of knowledge, what do you think of that?
Well, the tree of knowledge is like the well of knowledge. Again, it's almost the same story. It's starting to make me wonder if one borrowed from the other.
Another one I noticed when we were talking about it was Ash and Elm, the first two people. It begins with an A and an E, like Adam and Eve. Like, is that coincidence too? That's pretty wild.
Another quick thing is it seems like King Horik was a real asshole, too, for killing all the people who came back with all the gold and silver from the Siege of Paris. So it doesn't surprise me, really, that his nephew would end up murdering him.
Yeah, no wonder the Vikings said, "We don't need that guy," and they all took off on their own to make their fortune.
Well, that's it for today. Join us next time on the history of modern Greece. Stay safe and stay awesome.